Good to see everybody back this evening. Hope you've had a good day today. Got the JV coming in this evening. We know this is true because of the size of the crowd. But we really appreciate Justin's message this morning. You probably wonder why that happened with the PA system. And anytime somebody's preaching too good, I like to sabotage him in some way. And didn't even distract him. He just kept going. One of the things I have enjoyed about these young men that have been coming in and preaching for us these last several months is there's not a single one of them that takes himself too seriously, and yet there's not a single one of them that does not take God seriously. And I really believe we have a lot of hope for the future because of that. And so well done, and well done to Macy. I know Macy did this because afterward I told Justin Macy did a great job putting the lesson together, and he said she sure did. And then I told Macy the same thing, and she said thank you. So I think it was Mark Mowdy. It may have been somebody else. If it was you, you can tell me afterward. But it was back during a time where they were having 6 o'clock practices in the morning, and he said we really need to go to our coaches and find out what their motivational skills are and employ them with the church, because if they can get these kids out here at 6 in the morning, well, we need to find out their secret. And sure enough, with all due respect to those coaches who do have motivational skills, I will say this: if the kids didn't want to and the parents didn't want them to, they wouldn't be showing up for practice at 6 in the morning every single time. And that kind of goes to the heart of tonight's lesson. There is a principle in life, and it's essentially this: that which we value too cheaply, we esteem too lightly. We hold it in too low of esteem. That's a kind of a paraphrase from one of our founding fathers, that he said, what we obtain too lightly, we esteem too lightly, or what we obtain too cheaply. And he said, in addition to that, if heaven itself knows how to put a proper value on things, it would be really bad, or it would be strange indeed if we didn't put a high price on liberty. When we look at some of the things we value within our early nation's time, I think one of the things that we really admire is what people were willing to sacrifice for liberty. One of the things that we see today is the fact that people really maybe have obtained it too cheaply, and therefore they're willing to give it up too readily. And we're seeing that in a lot of different areas, but maybe no more so than we do in our right, God-given right, to honor God publicly. And when you take God out of the public square, then nothing else works. And I just think about these last couple of years with COVID. They have spoken about science in the same way we speak about God. We have to find out what the science says. We need to follow the science. We have to be careful to go by the science, as if the science is a god unto itself. I saw a deal this weekend where they were opening up an avenue of the Sphinxes, if I'm saying that right, in Egypt. And they had a big ceremony for it and a big to-do, and it really did look like an ancient idol worship. I suspect that's exactly what it was meant to pattern after, was that ancient idol worship. But if you'll recall, one of the things that the Israelites did when they left Egypt was they went back really quickly to worshiping a calf god. And obviously, the affront to God was incredible, but the idea that they would worship the created rather than the Creator was something that was offensive. And we're doing that today. Science is just an observation and then an attempt to try and figure out what to do about God's creation. True science was created by God. And the idea that somehow true science could conflict with God is just not possible. Well, getting back to this idea of once we start giving up things because we don't value them enough and nothing works, this is especially true in your relationship with God. The moment we stop thinking about God first thing in the morning when we wake up, the moment we stop having enough time to read the Word, the moment we stop having enough time to pray, the moment that we don't have enough time to start making sure our children are in worship and that we're at worship, it's a symptom that we're valuing it too low. We're giving too small of a price for it. And we're going to pay for that at some point. Judges chapter 2, if you'd like to turn over there. We looked at a lesson from Judges this morning. I want to go back to an early part of Judges. Judges chapter 2. And we'll start in verse 8. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timnath, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gash. After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up. And just think about this generation, by the way. The only two old people that they had when Caleb or when Joshua died were Joshua and Caleb. Moses and Miriam and Aaron had all died, and as had everybody over the age of 60 by the time they came out of the wanderings, the 40-year wanderings, because no one over the age of 20 was allowed to see the Promised Land except for Joshua and Caleb. So when we talk about this generation, the whole generation dying out, we really are talking about that group of people who are 60 years, maybe down to 40, 35 years old. And so it says, after that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up who neither knew the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Think about this. If your kids grow up where they don't know the Lord nor what he's done for us, you failed. You are an absolute failure as a parent. I'm not saying if they're faithful or not. That's up to them. Each one will determine whether they will be faithful or not once they get old enough. But if you raise your children not to know God or what he's done for you, your entire parenting has been a failure. You may have raised them to become a millionaire, to be an incredible patriot. Maybe they're a great athlete. Maybe they're a brilliant scientist, whatever it is. But if they don't know God and what he's done for them, as parents, we failed. This entire generation, I'm sure there was a scattering that were not like this, but the generation as a whole raised up a group of children who neither knew the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. So, look what happens. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the people around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Ashtoreths. In his anger against Israel, the Lord handed them over to raiders who plundered them. He sold them to their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he had sworn to them. They were in great distress. You wonder why our nation is in great distress today. It's because the generation as a whole has raised a group of children who are now adults who don't know the difference between righteous and wrong. And while we we're blessed here in ways that maybe we don't appreciate fully. The only reason that you can have leaders lead you into evil is because a generation fails. So, what do we do about it? Well, I'm glad you asked. Luke chapter 16 and verse 10. Jesus says, "He who is faithful in a very little thing is also faithful in much." I think about Carolyn with our little bitty kids. Holding on to them and teaching them about God, usually by singing to them. I didn't sing to our children for obvious reasons. It would have just scared them and they wouldn't have gone to sleep. But it seems like a little thing, but he who is faithful in the little thing is faithful in much. And so by starting to train your children, sometimes before they can speak, their earliest thoughts, never having a memory of not being in worship on the first day of the week, that's valuable. Always being in Bible class, that's valuable. That these things, they seem little. And in many ways they are. Anybody who's ever played a sport or who's coached a sport or who has taught a class understands that if you get the fundamentals right, the little things right, then big things can happen. But without getting the little things right, big things cannot happen. It used to hurt my feelings incredibly when my little basketball kids got up and started playing high school basketball and started doing things that they would have gotten in trouble for when they were 6 years old with me. And they would start carrying the ball and walking and doing things like that, and because of that they couldn't even get the play started when it was like that. Most of them didn't do that, but some of them did. And this is the thing, fundamentals. No matter what we're talking about, whether we're talking about a child's game, whether we're talking about courses that we learn in school, whether we're talking about learning to do something like weld or ride a horse, or whether we're talking about something as important as developing their immortal soul, it's these little things that are going to train them up to where you're not going to have to worry about them going apart later. And so and Jesus says this in verse 11, "If you've not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust you with true riches?" Now he's talking about our improper focus. "If you've not been faithful in the use of another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he'll hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." Some of your versions say money, some mammon. Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, who were listening to all these things, were scoffing at him. Why? How could it be that the religious leaders of their time thought more of money than they thought of God? Somebody didn't get their fundamentals right, did they? Somebody, when they were developing, either didn't take care of the little things that grew into big things, or they rejected them completely when they got older. But can you imagine being in Jesus' presence and hearing his wisdom, seeing the miracles, and then scoffing at him for something that he has said? And yet that was a position these leaders found themselves in. And so Jesus said this in verse 15, "You are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men, but God knows your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God." And this brings up something that I think is really important for us to understand. It is not that you cannot have a proper use of money. I hope you have a proper use of money. It's not that you cannot enjoy certain physical things. If you look at the way that God blessed some of the patriarchs, Abraham, Job, David, Solomon, he gave them wealth as a reward. If wealth itself was sinful, God would have never given that to them. But when our perspective is wrong, when we esteem too highly the physical things, then we put God down lower and we fail. And we can't do that. And Jesus points out, when we do that, we become detestable in the sight of God. This next thing I think is a critical point, and it's found in a parable that you could probably nearly quote. Luke chapter 12, verse 16. Jesus is talking about the ground of a certain man produced a good crop, and he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. And he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I'll store all my grains and all my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God. And so now we have this principle. The condemnation was not for storing up things for themselves. The condemnation was for those who were storing up things for themselves but weren't rich towards God. They were getting first consideration. And so we put now this principle in to what we've been talking about. When you put God first, everything else is going to work. Jesus said to them right after that, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you'll eat, or your body, what you'll wear. God will make sure you have plenty of resources to serve Him for the rest of your life. I know that there are times in life that it's scary, and I know there are times in life where we don't have as much laid by as we would like to. But the Creator of the universe is not going to ignore His servants' needs in serving Him. And so this gives us, I think, one of the greatest amounts of comfort that we can possibly have. Are you worried about dying early? There are two things. One, don't do anything stupid to where you're going to die early. And two, trust in God to keep His servants alive for as long as He wants them alive. If you do something to take yourself out of God's service early, that's a mistake. And people do that all the time. But if you're determined to serve God until you die, God will give you every moment you want. Some people He'll reward early. He did that with Enoch, didn't He? Enoch lived about a third of the lifespan of the people of his time, and God took him, not as a punishment, but as a reward. But the beauty of it is this. If your first plan in life is, I want to serve God for the rest of my life, you'll have everything you need to serve Him. It might not be the standard that you're hoping for. It may be way more than you're hoping, but it'll certainly be more than we deserve. God will give us more than enough. So whether we're talking about the length of your life, your health, don't you think that He will give you the measure of health you need to serve Him the best? And if it might be that you need to have your health compromised so that you can focus on Him more, He might do that too. Paul prayed three times that whatever physical thorn was in his flesh could be removed. If God would do it, that it would be. And God said, no, my grace is sufficient for you. Apparently, it made Paul a better servant. God will give you the health you need, and He will certainly give you the resources you need. And once we have those things, like I say, when Jesus said, therefore, I tell you, don't worry, it changes everything when you don't have to worry. But let's go back to this thought that we began with. What is it about our lives where we will make tremendous sacrifices for things that are just physical, but when it comes to service to God, sometimes we will say, no, that's too much. That's unreasonable. And I think it's because sometimes we value too low our service to God. Now, your service to God doesn't have to be the same as mine. And so we're not to compare ourselves to each other. But if we'll compare ourselves to Christ, I think we will always be finding that we could do a little bit more. And I also know for a fact that when we do more for God, that the blessings flow. There's one more thought. It'll take just a couple of minutes and we'll close. And that it begins in Psalms chapter 116, verse 12, where the psalmist says, how can I repay the Lord? for all his goodness to me. God's been good to us. So what does that mean for us in our relationship to him? How can you repay him? One of the simplest passages in Scripture is found in Micah 6, verses 6 through 8. And Micah says this, "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" What big thing can you do for God? What huge sacrifice is he looking for? He showed you, O man, what's good. And what does the Lord require? Require is a word we understand. What does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. If you and I can interact with other people with justice tempered with mercy, and if we can walk, if we can live before God in a humble way, as best we possibly can in service to him, that's enough. And it's probably more than I or maybe even you have been willing to give in the past. The simple things that God requires are not necessarily easy, but boy, they change our life and they make it better. And when we wonder how we can repay God for what he's done, in reality, of course, we cannot fully repay him. But we can live well for him for the rest of our life. It'll take a commitment to him, and it'll take a perspective that makes us realize that just as basketball practice at 6 was important for our kids to be there when we had our kids there, the worship service is even more important. And just as their good standing in their academics was important to us when they were small, their understanding of the Word of God is even more important. And it begins, I believe, with us, because our kids will follow our example more than they'll follow our conversation. But as far as repaying God, if we will do our best to serve him, there's tremendous reward for that here on earth, but for an eternity in heaven. We have to have the right perspective, and we need to value our service to God correctly before we'll ever be able to do that. The invitation's open. If you're ready to respond to the gospel's call, we would encourage you to do that while we stand.